What do we know so far about this, Dan, and what do we want to know? What questions would present themselves to try to be clarified? What do we know and what do we want to know? So we started to say yesterday that the whole concept of the takana of b'fananechta b'fananechtam is a funny place to start getting, but nonetheless seems to put us there anyway. And we talked about different reasons why, and among them, the fact that there are a lot of halachos of gittin that are going to be packed into this suitcase. And together with that, maybe one of the most fundamental, is just understanding where get falls in the world of shtaros. And in order to appreciate that, we also have to understand where the concepts that the Mishnah is talking about fall in the world of shtaros. So what din is taking up our attention here? Kiyum shtaros. And so what is kiyum shtaros? What's it about? And how does it relate to get? Because the truth is, that's a step behind what we need to be figuring out. This is, if there's apparently a takana about kiyum shtaros, so that affects kiyum shtaros, so what do we know about kiyum shtaros, and how does it relate to the whole world of shtar? So what can we identify within this? So you want to tell me something? Well, is kiyum shtaros a din min haTorah? Is it a din min derabbanan? What do you think? Okay, so if you'd be in pretty good company if you guessed Rabbanan, because that is the majority view, and that's the way it sounds like from a lot of sugyas and a lot of Rishonim. So why would you guess that, though? Now they've given you the confidence to know it's a good guess. So what pushes you in that direction?
Just the way that we have the best in functioning and all these things were handed over to the Rabbanan to set up for the functioning society more.
You're saying basically all the dinim of how we carry out things are Rabbanan?
I think so.
Okay, perhaps.
It also seems like a takana, meaning kiyum shtaros is not in every single case going to be required necessarily, and therefore it seems like a B plan almost. Once something occurs, there is a mezuyah, then we need that kiyum shtaros. So that seems like something that's inherently
there about it. So explain the last part. You're saying that it only seems reactive, you mean?
Yeah.
That there, you assume that a shtar that's not makuyim, is that valid?
In some cases, could be valid.
In some cases. Okay, what case?
Tosa spoke about I think that even in the case of the get, there are some cases of.
Okay, so maybe that's the answer. Yeah. Then we don't know if that's the rule or the exception, right? But maybe the get might be a good example of where it could be valid even without the kiyum, possibly. Eric?
The Rambam says so.
The Rambam says so. Okay, so you're skipping the guest path and going to... So, now when the Rambam says so, what's the context of the Rambam saying that? Right, it's actually something we referred to a little bit last week or before that even. Right, why would kiyum shtaros have to be derabbanan, especially according to the Rambam? Yeah, Boaz?
Because he holds that there's no such thing as shtar in general.
So the Chazal who wished upon the shtar, right? You don't have a concept of a shtar without derabbanan. So a part of it is the kiyum. Right? So it's part and parcel of the whole program, but that's a din derabbanan. And the Rambam connects it to the goal, which is going to be a great segue into Puzbol, because it's one of the major values of Shalotino Delos Bifnei Lovin, that we don't want to close the door, or literally slam the door in the face of borrowers. So we have this constant concern that there should be a route that allows them to have easy access to loans, which means that lenders have to have confidence. Lenders have to have confidence, they need to be able to prove their point in a reasonably accessible fashion. Which is why we have all kinds of dinim, and keep that in mind for Puzbol, because it plays a major role. But also, that's why we allow Bati Din to be set up today, even without Smuchim, in order to adjudicate these cases, because we want lenders to feel confident so that loaners can get what they need. So, what does that say about a shtar that's not Likuya? So, yeah, Shmuel? Okay, did you?
Maybe it could still be valid because the whole concept of shtaros is only there to begin with.
Okay, so therefore, but maybe they made it all one package, then without Kiyum, maybe
right.
It's nothing. Maybe.
Right.
So, the truth is, we'll see, there's some ambiguity about that, right? So, if there's something that gets in the way of our using a shtar when it's not Mekuyim, does that knock out the shtar completely? Or is that just a procedural bump that we can't proceed right now because we don't have full confidence in it, or we don't have, maybe we need full confidence in order to be able to move forward, but the shtar itself is not necessarily disqualified. And what would that matter? It would matter, let's say, what happens after the fact if a shtar was already used to accomplish something without kiyum. We say that the shtar was no good, or we just can't proceed when it doesn't have that verification. So, what would the story be for a get? So, what are the moving parts regarding a get? So, what role would Kiyum Shtaros play?
I mean, it says that only when there's Orim Hukam, then you need Kiyum Shtaros to validate.
Right, in the case of, that's the second case in Mishnah, right, the last case in
Mishnah.
Right, so here, just to be clear, when the Mishnah mentions that, what's the context? Right, the context is, we don't have B'fanei Nechta, B'fanei Nechtam in that case, right, because this is the case of Mevi Gep Eretz Yisrael. So here, you don't have that issue that prompted the Takana. So, Eino Tzor Hashem B'fanei Nechta, B'fanei Nechtam, V'yishol, V'orin Yiskayim B'chosmon. So then we'll just go to regular Kiyum Shtaros, which will be possible, as Rashi says, Im Yidu Ha'edim Al-Chasimus Yideyem, Ha'edim Ha'cherim Yekiru Chasimus M'kashim, Eino Ha'erim V'stam Ha'kashim, Deha V'kiyum L'shma V'edim Mitzuyin Tombe L'kaimo. Right, so basically, Rashi, as he explains that, the din of the Mishnah, is that when we don't have the din, we don't have the takana of B'fanei Nechta, B'fanei Nechta, so then Kiyum Shtaros will be available if necessary, if there's going to be a error. And if not, so then if there's no error, so then presume it's kosher. You know, we don't need to do anything, right? Because we can assume that the premise is that there was Lishma, because in Eretz Yisrael there are Bekiyim in that. So that's enough to rely on. And apparently we're not going to assume that it's Mezuyev. Right? And that is really, you mentioned the difficulty of the Tosfos, which, you know, it is, but just to go to the beginning of it. Right? So that's what Tosfos takes up at the beginning. And so Aval called, to read the first line of Tosfos, Aval calls man delo asi ba'al ma'aron. And so as long as the Baal does not come and complain, this is self pi haget. So therefore, we let the get function. We don't assume that there's any problem. Below Tanina and Mezuyev. Now, Tanina, what does Tanina mean? Right, it comes from the word to claim. What does it mean functionally? Right, that basically, do we advocate on behalf of somebody who's not there? Right, that we sometimes find that Beis Din will step in and advance a claim on behalf of somebody who needs help. Why would they need help? Maybe they're Yisomen, right? Maybe they are orphans and they can't speak up on behalf of themselves. Or maybe they're simply not there and not aware. Right? So, or maybe possibly unaware. Right? So if somebody shows up in Beis Din with a get and the husband's not there, so do we act on his behalf? Now, just to understand and appreciate for a second, it's going to affect the answer, what taninan would mean. So taninan doesn't necessarily mean that you advocate to advance a claim. Or it doesn't necessarily mean that you are maintaining something is true, let's say depending on how it's invoked, you're not allowed to lie. Let's say the question of, when we're talking about here, let's say somebody bringing up a taina on behalf of somebody else, she doesn't know if it's true or not, or how tainas work. So, for example, if you're familiar with the concept of migo, right, the idea that sometimes your taina is stronger because you have other tainas available to you, that itself kind of indicates that a taina is basically an inherent strength. It's a card that you have to play. So the presence, the existence of a taina in your deck is something that gives you a certain power. So here, the question is, should someone come forward on behalf of the husband who's not here and say, Mizuyev? So let's say it's a forgery. Now apparently, what we see from the Mishnah, as Tosfos is pointing out, is that we're not going to assume that. We're not going to assume that in the absence of anyone affirmatively making that claim, that there is a strong enough possibility of forgery. So why not? And in Tosfos, in its Arichas here, it doesn't really help answer that question for the other Rishonim come to answer it more. Sorry? So Tosfos does mention Iguna, right? That part, that there is a general attitude of Kula. In general, it's interesting that the whole klal of Mishum Iguna Hikilu Be'Rabbanan, just to be appreciative of that, you know, what exactly that means. You know, we use the word Iguna in multiple senses. So nowadays we use it to mean a woman who is being denied a get, or could also, because we've established the Isser of being Megarish, a wife, Balkarcha, so you also could have an organ. You could have somebody, a man, who's refusing, whose wife is refusing to receive a get. It was in the news last week. Just a little bit of current events connection to the Masafta. If you saw it, sorry, you saw the news? There was a story in the news last week that for the first time, apparently, the Israeli courts put a woman in jail for refusing to accept a get. So that's a reflection of what we discussed, that midrabanan, it's made bilateral. So we don't give out heter meir rabbanans too easily, so the first path is to try to actually make sure it goes through the way it's supposed to. So a woman who's refusing to accept the get can also cause problems, and should also really be treated the same way. So that was news this week, you can Google it, that a woman is put in jail in Israel because she refuses to accept a get. So you could have that usage of Agun or Aguna, somebody whose spouse is refusing to cooperate. The classical Aguna that you find in Yevamos and the like, that's more often discussed in Shas, is when the husband is missing. And of course, this week of 9/11, that was, in the modern context, very tragically, one of the most prominent applications of the context of Aguna, because in history, it's meant to often, I mean, certainly it's true in the modern era also, but if a husband goes off to war and is missing in action, or otherwise disappears, either purposely or not, and purposely is what creates the suffix, but if, let's say, if the husband is not found, we have no idea where he is, and he's assumed dead, so when can we halachically rule that he is considered to be dead? So, as you mentioned purposely, the concern is that maybe he did disappear purposely, but if we assume he didn't disappear purposely, but if you really believe he's dead, we need to prove it halachically. So we find that the Gemara has that phrase in that context, that Mishum Iguna Hikilu Be'Rabbanan, that Chazal were Mekel because of Igun. So you find it in that context. Nowadays, so we're inclined to bring it up in the context of recalcitrance. Here, what you find in this reference in this Gemara and some of the Dinim and Shulchan Aruch and the like that surround this sugya, it's kind of in between. It's a get kind of Igun rather than a almana Igun. So when somebody is missing, that's a almana Igun. Here we're talking about a divorce Igun, but we're not talking about necessarily about recalcitrance, but about other things that could get in the way. So if the get is going to come from far away, and we're worried about how to make sure that we can rely on it, or how much do we have to worry about something that's not in front of us, such as a potential claim of mezuyif. So we have an attitude of trying to make things as smooth as possible because of mishum migunim. Hi.
Going back to the case of igun, of like a missing spouse. So if the wife was missing, let's say, so would there be that big of an issue? Because, I mean, theoretically, he could just marry somebody else.
Right, so it wouldn't be as big of an issue because... So let's explore that for a second, just because it also highlights the mechanics.
Right.
So if the wife is missing, so when it comes to the normal recalcitrant situation, so a husband who might want to move for recalcitrance, if one's refusing to cooperate. And so there, let's say the situation of news, if the wife is refusing to accept the get, so there, what are the husband's options? Right? Either he could divorce her against her will, or he could marry another woman while still married to her. Now, both of those are prohibited by Cherem de Beinu Gershom, so that's why we don't allow that casually, and we try to resolve the situation in the more straightforward fashion. So let's say she's missing and presumed dead. So then, what's involved? So he's not looking to divorce her at all. That's not on the table. So the question is just, can he remarry while being married to her? So that's going to be easier to justify. You know, the standard of whether you would say that the possibility that she's still alive is enough to even need a Heter Mei Rabbanim, but then the question is, so what will it take to justify that under those circumstances? And that's what to talk about. Or, being that we're dealing with an Issa D'Rabbanan, so what standard would we need in order to establish that? And when it comes to the other direction, when it's the husband, it's the wife who wants to remarry because the husband is presumed dead, so there's the Issa of Gilei Arayos and potential Mamzeris that is involved. So the stakes are much higher. And nonetheless, we see that Hikilu V'Rabbanan, so the Chazal are Mekel. What does that mean, they're a Mekel? They're makel in order to, in the sense of accepting certain standards of evidence that they wouldn't accept otherwise. And we're talking about a davar she'ev erva should require two edim. And yet there's a reducing in the standards. So how does that work? So it's not simply, especially because there you're dealing certainly with Torah law, right? So it's not that they simply said, okay, let's have rachmanis and be makel. There still needs to be a mechanism. There still needs to be something that allows that to work, even though that's the motive. So the motive is to save this woman from limbo, but it doesn't explain how it operates. You know, as we approach Sukkot, so Rav Schechter sometimes quotes from Rav Soloveitchik that there was a professor who claimed when he comes to Hilchos Sukkot, so you know we have all kinds of halachah moshe misinais that allow us to build four walls of a sukkah with less than full four walls of material. So a professor once claimed that the rabbis, the Talmud, they allowed this because the times were hard and wood was expensive and it was hard to get enough wood to build a full sukkah, so they allowed this. So I don't know how that resonates with you as far as the integrity of halacha. And Soloveitchik's response to that apparently was that it's not necessarily wrong, it's just answering the wrong question. That there may have been some kind of need like that, but that wouldn't still explain how it works. That's like saying, how did the Allies build a nuclear bomb during World War II? Well, they needed to defeat Japan, so they built a nuclear bomb. So, yeah, that explains what's going on, but it doesn't explain the physics of it. And so to here, you have to explain what was going on. So what was making this happen? And how does it work? So in the case of missing husbands, so they were able to factor in certain things. So for example, there's great chumrah involved if she's wrong. Right? That if the husband does turn up and she's already remarried to somebody else, so then there's no slack that's cut for that, but she's considered to be in a situation of adultery, and she has to divorce both husbands. Right? So that sounds like a tremendous chumrah. Right? But that's also what makes it work, as the Gemara says. That mishum chumrah shechmarta v'sofa yikalti v'chelasso. That because the consequences are so high, the stakes are so high, that contributes to the credibility. That it gives us further basis to assume that this woman is not going to actually remarry unless she's really confident that's not going to happen. You know, unless she's really sure that her original husband is not going to turn up. So that becomes a factor in establishing what's going on, and that becomes part of the mechanics of how it works. So because we have this extra reason to have credibility, and we want to use it because of the situation of Igun, so Igun pushes us to look for ways for it to work, and here's a way it works, that we have this basis to take things more seriously, because it would be very, very harmful for the woman to remarry without really being confident that the husband's not going to show up. So, essentially, how much do we need something like that here? Right, so let's transfer that over to here. So, in that case, we have a mechanism that we're able to use. Is that what's going on here? So if we say that, okay, we'll trust the get without any further confirmation, and we're not going to factor in the possibility that the husband may complain because of Igun. So what does that sentence mean based on now what we know? Right? We're not talking about a case where he does complain. If he does complain, so then we'll have to go through Kiyum Shtaros, and that'll have to be the approach. But the question Tosus was raising is, why don't we assume maybe he will complain? Why is that not enough of a factor? Oh, Iguna. What is Iguna do for us? Right, if we've seen that Iguna is not the answer, it's the reason for an answer, or it's the context of an answer. So then what does that do for us, Jonah? So I mean, it sounds like what we're looking for is that Iguna is not, it's just giving us a framework for it, but it's telling us there's something already that is already there to tap into. So that's how Tosfos is answering and not answering, because Tosfos is saying something relevant, but is not really explaining what's going on. So what could possibly be the answer? So as other Rishonim discuss this in more detail, but just on the top of your heads, what could possibly be the answer? So what do we have to explore here? So one thing to explore is just, well, what is the credibility of Yir HaBaal? Right? So let's say the husband does show up and say it's a forgery. So do we assume that that's substantive? How much would you credit that?
Isn't that the Edom before?
Is what the Edom on the get is for. Right? So he's coming against the Edom. Right? But the Edom, let's say they were Mekuyim.
I feel like the Edom would override.
When they're Mekuyim. Yeah. Not without, with or without Kiyum. Well, I guess it matters, right? So
yeah.
So let's say you have a get with Edom that have not been verified. And a husband comes and says, yeah, the whole thing's a joke. Right? We don't know what kind of guy this is. He could certainly have all kinds of motives. So is there a reason to grant him automatic credibility? Maybe there's a custody battle. Right? Maybe he's been torturing her throughout the marriage. Right? So would anyone say, okay, you're about, that's the end of the story, it's over, it's definitely a forgery?
That was like
Marvin's
not given all that. When you only have one aid, then it's basically a one-on-one. They both cancel out, as opposed to when you have two aid, then it's a two-on-one. That's a clue that ends up leading to a chumrah.
Okay, that becomes a part of the mechanics, right? So part of it is, logically speaking, let's say there was the actual Yir HaBaal. So how much should that count for? And then, once you can figure out how much it should count for, then you can take a step back and say, how much should the possibility of that happening before it happens, how much should that count for? Caleb?
What's the Yir HaBaal be exactly?
He comes and he says it's a forgery. What are you talking about? Divorce? I never got divorced. Never happened. My wife has always been causing problems. She hired somebody to make up a fake get and put my name on it, and that's just like her. That's why we've been having these issues.
Sounds like they want to get divorced.
No, it sounds like, unfortunately, like I mentioned the other week, I deal with these things too much. You know, it's these are the kind of games people play. I mean, this is a little sophisticated as much as that, but historically, yeah, if you've ever read about these things, you know, certainly people do, unfortunately, play all kinds of games with each other, right? So, especially if, let's say, if you want to put all the burden on him, if he's an especially sleazy guy, so he could be playing the game from all the angles, right? He could tend to get, pretend it was claimed later that he didn't really do it, and that way he's also, maybe he's been doing this to his wife all along. So, a couple questions that we have to consider, and again, my deep apologies for the timing, so we'll just look up this tomorrow, actually, another minute or two. But just to quickly focus what we're trying to figure out, right, so how much power should that have when there are unverified Edom? How much power should it have against verified Edom? So that we already know, but just logically. And then, working backwards, so how much should we be concerned about that possibility when it hasn't even happened? Right, so if we have a get that comes before Beis Din, and our only question is, should we just run with it, or wait to see how the Baal reacts, or advocate on his behalf? So where does that factor in? And Tosus is asserting right off the bat that we don't do that, right? We don't worry about that, so why not? Is that because it's not likely, like some of the Rishonim say? Or is that because the whole need to worry about it is a lower level issue? By other stars, it's a lower level issue, and true here also. So all of that is going to help us understand how stars work and how the Nemanis here of the Baal works. And then the Takana on top of that, to replace that with B'fanei Nechtam, which isn't the case in the last line of Mishnah, but is the case in general, when there's a geographical need for it. But that seems to be replacing Kiyum Shtaros, or doing something to accomplish what Kiyum Shtaros does. So how exactly does that operate? So, Be'ez Hashem, we'll try to get all that done tomorrow. Again, thank you for your tolerance, and wish you a fantastic day. Yom Shavuot.